Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Lexi Villa from Torrance, California. Lexi has SMA, and we've met several times at the conference in the past few years. So, Lexi, great to have you today.
Hi, what's up? How are we doing?
Great. Happy to be here. Well, before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. Whether you are living with SMA or are the parent to a child with SMA, make a choice today that could impact your future. Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so Lexi, if you can just start off telling listeners about yourself and for you, what it was like growing up with SMA.
Well, I am going to be 27 in September. I was diagnosed at a year and a half, originally with type 3, because then we were like obviously discussing milestones. It was always what milestone you met. When I started to pursue treatment, I was re-diagnosed 3 different times. So the consensus at the moment is that I have type 2. And I would be considered like a stronger type 2 because I did walk for a little bit in my childhood. Overall, it was messy. It was messy, I think, like for most of us as a child, you know, going through the transitions of trying to like fit in and just like making friends. Like that was always really difficult. But high school was, I think, where I really like found my groove. Not to say that I had like friends or anything, because that still was like on the back burner, but I really found myself. So when I left high school, I kind of had this clarity and like outlook on life and like what I wanted to do. And I knew like at an early age that I needed to be independent. Like I had to get the heck away from home, and I needed to, you know, go out and do big things, whatever like that was for me. For a long time, I wanted to travel, but eventually it just became like I needed to just get out of my house. So I moved out fairly young at like 18 and been on my own since, which is pretty wild. I work, I do things, you know, I'm like really big into like the horror scene. So like come Halloween, it's my season. It's where I thrive. So I don't know. Took a lot of finding me, but I found it. So it's good. It's all good.
Sure. And backtracking just a little. So like, can you talk about like what your home life was growing up? Like, do you have siblings? Anything you want to share there?
I have 3 siblings. None of them have SMA, but myself, I'm actually the oldest of four. Home life was a little bit messy. I noticed a lot, especially at this last conference, a lot of people really do have really strong family structures. I unfortunately did not have that same type of family structure. A lot of it has to do with like being first generation Latina. It has to do with like my family's like upbringing culturally. So it was just very, like I said, very messy. I dealt with a lot of, this kind of goes for a lot of us. We hear it all the time. Like, we need to pray more, or we need to try like some sort of like holistic healing to fix the SMA. So I went for a long time kind of being overlooked, where I wasn't getting the treatment I needed. So I had a lot of like GI issues that weren't being addressed. I lost a lot of weight, and it wasn't until I got older, and like I said, around high school era and leaving high school, where I realized, oh, maybe this isn't healthy. But it wasn't until I started meeting other people with SMA and learning what they were doing to take care of their bodies and their, at the time, because there was no treatment, what they were doing to like combat the regression in their muscles and all these things. And I was like, oh, I definitely need to be doing more and like this idea of physical therapy. That is not it. I have to be doing so much more in terms of like my diet. So I basically went full force between like 18 and 20, just deep diving into my health, where I was had like 3 or 4 doctor's appointments a week, trying to find a good neurologist, trying to find a good GI, trying to find a good physical therapist, trying to find a good, you know, like the doctors that we actually need, while simultaneously learning how to weed them out. So it was really messy because I didn't have that, like, unfortunately, my parents didn't necessarily do all the deep diving when I was younger. So I had to do it. So simultaneously to like looking for doctors, I had to learn how to weed them out too, which I think made my process take a whole lot longer. A lot of individuals, especially, like I said, when I met more people with SMA, a lot of parents had kind of created like a set of like a kind of plan for them, you know, a care plan, I guess, of sorts. And as adults, they either ran with it or they made all the changes necessary. I didn't have any sort of plan. I didn't even really, other than the fact that I had SMA and I knew what it would do to my body, I didn't know anything about what it was doing to my body. I didn't know that it was going to affect like my stomach. I didn't know it would eventually affect my heart. I didn't know it would affect my speech. I didn't know it would like mess with my hands as drastically as it did. Especially like with school, I didn't know about a lot of like accommodations that I could have had as like a student that would have made my life significantly easier. So all of that too, though, helped me, because then I knew, okay, this is what I want to do. Like, I want, whether it's going to be like yelling into the emptiness, especially like with social media, I was like, somebody's going to hear me. And a lot of my support in transitioning into an adult came from other adults with SMA.
Sure. I mean, I think that's the case for a lot of us in terms of building that community, and particularly social media has helped with that in the last decade or so. And that's a huge part of it. And going back to, you said, talk about finding yourself, recognizing that need for independence. So when you were 18 and you moved out, what were the steps there? Where did you go? How did you manage care? What was that process like?
So like I said, my family structure wasn't the greatest. So it was like, we're jumping ship. We're gone. We're leaving. We're going. And I jumped into it blindly with nothing, with no care, nowhere really to like necessarily go. I was like, this will work itself out, right? Like it'll figure it out. But I ended up moving in with my best friend, and I met an adult with SMA who was like, okay, if you don't have care, you need IHSS. If you don't have this, you need this. And then like, I learned how to, I was an honor student, you know, I AP classes, graduated with honors, got into the colleges of my dreams. And then there's just a big like block in the road, you know, like I said, things were messy at home. So, couldn't move forward the way I wanted to. So between like 18 and 20, I spent 2 years just kind of figuring things out. Like I said, deep diving into medical stuff. But the big things were like, I learned about IHSS. I learned how I could take out loans for school, so, and how they wouldn't necessarily affect me, because disability loan forgiveness, essentially. So that was all done via social media. I got really lucky where I started posting about like having issues, and people were reaching back out and being like, hey, like, have you heard of this? Like I said, IHSS, have you heard of like student loan forgiveness? Have you looked into like accommodations through school? Have you looked into access? There were like so many programs that were brought up to me by other people. And I think even more so, I was a little disappointed too, because one, all of these resources could have been made known like in my childhood, and two, none of the actual resources I had, like doctors, social workers, things like that, none of them told me any of this, which is where you think you would be able to get that information. It came from, like I said, other disabled people. Even if they didn't have SMA, I met a few people too who were like, oh, I get care through like the state. I get care through, like I said, IHSS. I think there was someone else too who mentioned basically that like the hours that they got couldn't go to their parents. And like, I learned so much after the fact, and I was like, this is really messy. I mean, I was already in a mess. And I think too, at the time, it was a little bit easier for me because I was more mobile. Not like I was walking or anything, but I was still like transferring a little on my own. I was still getting dressed on my own. I was still like going through the motions on my own. So I didn't need a lot of care. And I know for myself, like that's even just a very like fortunate statement, because I know not everybody has that. So like I said, all I want now is let me just throw these things out there. Let me throw them out there. Like everything that I learned as a 18-year-old, 19-year-old transitioning into adulthood, and maybe some teenage kid will find it and learn younger. And all I want is for their life to be easier, because Lord knows this was not an easy process.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm here nodding my head, because what you said about getting all this information, it takes people in the community and kind of outside resources to find all that. Because I mean, I've been fortunate to have really good doctors my whole life, but when I started the process of hiring personal care assistants, it wasn't through medical professionals that I learned where to start. It was like people in the community, just my mom and I figuring out things on our own. It was, you know, they don't make it easy for to like, you, it should be a step of like, okay, go here if you want this, etc. But it's a very complex process that it very much takes a village of us to help each other out in that regard.
Yeah, well, it was at this last conference I met who is now my best friend. She works with students, like special ed students. And she told me that like there's a, that because she worked through like all the way through high school, basically, that there's basically a transition to adulthood kind of like IEP meeting where they like ask you what you want to do and they kind of help you like navigate those waters. And that's done because you have an IEP. And I didn't even know that was a thing. Like I've been doing my own IEP since I was like 13, and I didn't know like I could have a parent present, and I could have had like more, my school life could have gone completely differently if I would have like known these things. I was like lugging around books and trying to figure out like how I was going to do all these things, trying to figure out how I was going to write fast enough for a test. I was like, I noticed like little things that most students don't think about. And all I could think was, I need to try harder. Like I have to keep going. I need to try harder. And it wasn't until later that I found out that the playing field could have been evened out a little bit to help me, whether it be like having my laptop in class, or having someone else take my notes, or having extra textbooks for home and for school. Like none of that came into light until I was, like I said, an adult going to college. And that was obscene. I thought that was horrible. None of my teachers either decided like, hey, maybe she's struggling, let's try to help her. No, it was just, she'll figure it out. She's good. She's got this.
It's very much a case of you have to do everything yourself and speak up whenever you need something. And we're very much taught self-advocacy from a young age in our community. Absolutely. Well, Lexi, we'll get back in just a minute to talk about college and career. But before we do, if everyone can please listen to another brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. If you are living with SMA, the subtle changes that happen from one day to the next can be hard to notice until a key function is lost. Many people find that these changes can impact their life not just physically, but also emotionally. Since the progression of SMA is relentless, taking action now is important. If you've waited to go on treatment or were told there were no treatments for you, now might be the time to talk to your doctor. Breakthroughs in science have led to more options than ever before in treatment and care. Choosing a disease-modifying treatment can make a difference. Why wait? Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so Lexi, going back to that stage of figuring things out, what did you do for college initially, and what was your major?
So I went to community college first, and I was told majority of my life that I needed to get a serious degree so I can get a serious job, so I can make serious money, so I could take care of myself like everybody. So I did that. I was always while taking art courses because passion-wise, I love photography and art and crafting, but I was like, no, I got to be a business student. I'm going to be an accountant. I'm going to be an accountant. I'm going to do the things, right? The business thing. So I did. And it was actually pretty wild. I did fairly well. And I, instead of taking 2 years, I only took a year and a half. And I was applying to transfer. And because I was a disabled student, before I could submit my applications to transfer and to get like certain waivers, I did have to meet with a counselor. To kind of like navigate, like, did I know what schools offered the same major? Did I have any idea where I wanted to go? Which I don't think I needed, but I knew it was part of the process. So I did it. And I brought up like schools in California within like driving distance. And the counselor was like, why? Where do you want to go? And I was like, well, what do you mean where I want to go? I can't really go where I want to go. I got to go where I can go and what's within my vicinity. And she was like, well, there are a lot of opportunities for you. You know, your grades are really good. You have like, you did everything you needed to do in a year and a half. You look pretty good on a transcript. Why don't you just try it? So I applied to San Diego State and I wasn't thinking anything of it. I was like, it's not going to happen. Like, it doesn't matter. And then I got my acceptance letters and that was the first one I got back. And then I started looking into it because let me just see. I got the acceptance letter. Let me just see what I can get from it, right? So I started exploring and it turns out, unknowingly, I applied to their online business program. So I didn't even have to be present on campus 100% of the time. I only needed to be there like 25% of the time for like major tests and things like that. And after talking about it with, he's now my husband. But at the time he was my best friend and I was like, what do you think I should do? Like, this is crazy. I got the opportunity to go where I want to go. Like, what the F, you know, like this never happens. Should I go or do I just pick the safe school? Cause this is right here, like in the backyard, not really the backyard, but you know what I mean? And he was like, do it. Like, what's the worst that happens is like, you got to transfer to another school later. And I was already like in a good spot. I had worked so hard. So I said, F it, I did it. And it was probably one of the best decisions I made for myself. I spent a lot of time down in San Diego for tests and for football games and homecoming and spending time on campus. And I'm really glad that I took that plunge. Obviously, it took a lot out of us too, like having to drive back and forth from LA. But it was so worth it in terms of like satisfying little me's wants. Like, again, it was completely, had you mentioned that to me like in high school, I would have been like, you're ridiculous. Like, I can't go that far. I have to go to, you know, somewhere big, but like UCLA, USC, somewhere LA based. So it's not that far from me. And no, I ended up going, you know, 2.5 hours away to San Diego and it was more than worth it. So definitely got to live my beach life for a while. And now we're back in LA.
That's awesome. And well, it's really fascinating that you're able to do the hybrid virtual and in person well before that was popular. Obviously now it's like it's kind of a different world in post COVID.
Yeah, I did it before COVID, before it was like a mandatory part. You know, I got to do it, so it was nice to have the choice to do it, because I know a lot of people were forced into it. And I always tell people, like, online learning is not easy. Like it's a lot more self-driven, which is great because you get to make your schedules and you get to figure everything out, like, kind of for yourself. But it also leaves a lot of time to get lazy. So don't be me.
Well, I was about to say, I mean, I really enjoyed college, but the only online classes I took were the ones that I didn't care about, like either in summer classes or during the regular semester. It was usually the gen eds that I didn't really have any interest in whatsoever. So I don't think I would have. I'm glad I graduated and started working before COVID, because I don't think I would have done well with that system. But I think working from home is just a different vibe altogether than online learning. But that's really cool that it worked for you and you were able to do that and have that independence.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And then, so you mentioned your husband. Can you talk about how you met and how your relationship evolved?
Okay, before I even get into this story, disclosure, it is not a lie, but it sounds like a big fat lie. I met my husband when I was in third grade. I was 8 years old and he was 9. And I laugh at it all the time because he was just the weird kid who came up to the weird disabled kid who was sitting by herself and was like, "What's wrong with you?" And that same distaste you hear in my voice, that's how he asked me. Okay. That's not an exaggeration. That's not in anything. That's how he asked me. And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he wanted to know about why I wasn't out at recess, why I wasn't playing, why I was different, and kind of just built from there. All of elementary school, or the rest of elementary school, middle school, and high school, we went to school together. He did his thing, I did my thing. So we were just friends. I always called him my best friend. We were really just pains in the asses. Like, you know, we were like brother and sister for a long time, and we were just picking on one another. But it was really nice to have someone there that kind of always looked out for me. I'm sassy, so sometimes I don't watch my mouth, and sometimes people piss me off, and I don't know. I think I'm a 12-foot man who's just gonna knock somebody out, but then I remember I'm like a 3-foot woman who's not. He was always kind of right behind me in the perfect instances to be like, "You're not gonna do anything. You're not gonna tell her anything. You're not gonna hit her. You're not gonna this. You're not gonna that." Because again, like, sometimes I don't know when to hold my tongue. But if you pissed me off, I wasn't gonna sit there and take it. But I forgot it was disabled a couple times. So he's always been a big help in my life. And when we got out of high school, things kind of changed a little bit for us both. You know, he went going to school in one place and I was going to school in another, but we also lived around the block from one another. So it was kind of like, "Hey, let's meet up at the end of the day and we'll grab food or something and kind of like decompress." And then I didn't realize it, but like I was missing so many things from my high school experiences because like I didn't have like a big friend group and things like that. That when we got out of high school, he kind of made it his like unofficial job where if I said I wanted to do something, he took it like as a challenge. So if I said, "Oh, I've never been down to like, you know, summer rolls around. I've never been down to the beach." "What do you mean you've never been to the beach?" "Well, sand, bro. Like, how the heck do you want me to do that? Like, it doesn't work." "No, don't worry. We'll figure it out." So there he is. At the time, I was only 75 pounds. Now, it's a different story. But he lugged me on his back all the way out to the water so I can sit there and do it. I said I'd never been hiking. And there he was dragging my manual chair up a muddy hill, hoping to God we didn't slide down it. I don't know. I said I'd never seen big trees. And he was like, "What do you mean?" "Well, I've never been camping. And I see all these photos of like the sequoia trees and like these giant trees that people could like stand behind and you can't see them anymore." And he took me. I said I never saw snow. He took me. So I didn't realize it, but he was like taking me on unofficial dates. while taking me on dates. And it was just little things that, like I said, I had said I never did. And he was like, well, let's go. And then eventually we were like hanging out with friends one time and he was like, oh yeah, that's my wife over there. And I was like, excuse me, sir, that's your who? I'm your what? That's a big word. Obviously we know that like with all the restrictions for disabled people, risking care and things like that, real marriage is not exactly an option. So no, we are not officially married, but he's my life partner for sure. And I do call him my husband. He does call me his wife. And people always, oh, well, when, how, like, I want to see wedding photos. When was this? And I'm like, you don't get it. Then you don't get it. This is just like real love, guys. I don't know how to explain that much further than that.
That really needs to be a movie. I mean, my sister and I grew up watching Boy Meets World. And that's like, that is such a Cory and Topanga story.
Yeah.
I love it. That's awesome. Oh, that's so funny. Like, I think I knew from conferences you had been friends a long time. I did not know it stretched back that far. So that's awesome.
Yeah, as I got older and I started telling more people, or not telling more people, but like in high school when you're like, oh, I've known someone since I was 8, it's not a big deal. But now we're almost 30 and still saying I've known him since I was 8. People are like, no, you're lying. You're lying. And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, no, I hear it now. Now I'm like, oh, it does sound like a big fat lie. No one would believe this. But no, that's how we met. And here we are all these years later. I always tell people, like, you know that movie Up? Yeah, that's kind of how my life is.
I love it. Oh, that's awesome. And can I add, is he one of your primary caregivers? Or what is your situation now?
He's my full-time caregiver. I've made a lot of changes to my physical being. So like I have an SPC and I have my feeding tube to kind of like make sure I could stay as independent as possible. So for me, at least at the moment, the type of care that I do need is a couple hours in the morning, shower, get dressed, brush my teeth, fix my hair, do the things, get me in my chair. And then I'm able to be by myself most of the day. And then I basically need that same help in the evening, get out of the chair, undress, you know, basically like turn down service essentially. So it works out for us. For a couple years, it was messy because we were always trying to figure out, okay, our school schedules, especially how are we going to like line up our courses so I can get you to school and then get myself to school and then pick you up. And if you need the bathroom or if you need whatever, like, how are we going to do this? And then when I started working, that's where things actually got a little easier because it was like, okay, she has school from this hour to this hour. I got to pick her up and then take her to work. And then another 4 hours, like for him to do whatever he needed. And then, you know, for me to like work my shift. And then right now, just within like this last year, he got like the absolute perfect schedule. Thank you, like, to the universe. He starts work at 10:30 and he's out at 6:30. So we get up earlier, we get ready, we do everything we need to do. He gets himself ready, sets me up for the day, and then leaves. And then it actually just so happens now too that work is fairly close, so he can either drive me to work and then come back and switch cars, or I can walk to work. And then in the evening, he's home in time for us to like make dinner together and do all those same things without like stressing ourselves out. Like, we actually have more time together and less time. Okay, I need to hurry up and get you ready because I got to go. Like, I got to hurry up and do this because we got to go here. Or our schedule is much nicer now, but we're also no longer in school. So, you know, it takes time.
Oh, absolutely. It's like anything in life. I mean, things evolve and you adapt as they go, and particularly in life with SMA. And then with your work, so are you still in accounting or what do you do now?
I make candles and I sell soap.
That's awesome.
So my business degree, my accounting degree, so my official, the fancy stuff is I got a degree in business management with a minor in accounting and a minor in marketing. but I also have a certificate in photography and graphic design. And I just decided I was going to do all the things simultaneously. So in the pandemic, when I lost my job, I was originally working in retail. This was like, I was still in school. So I lost my job and I didn't know what to do. And my cousin actually was like, Lex, you're super crafty. Why don't you like do something, like, you know, make something, you know, you have time. She's like, I know you're losing your head here at home. She's like, but I also don't want you to go back to work. She's like, it's too scary out there. You know, no one knew what was going on and how to deal with it. And being, you know, having a compromised immune system, I just didn't want to risk anything either. So I said, okay. So I started making candles and I put my degree to work in terms of that, like knowing how to run a small business. But I'm really just crafty. I don't even utilize my degree probably the way I should, but every tax season I do everybody's taxes, you know, so I'm certified there too. I just do a lot of things, but I'm fairly passionate about, like I said, my photos and my crafting. So if I could just do that, that would be ideal. But I also still work in retail. So I work at Lush. So I sell bath bombs and skincare and body care and all the things. And I like it because it keeps me, Eric, so that's my husband's name, Eric. He has told me like multiple times, if I wanted to dedicate myself to being crafty, that I absolutely could. But I really like working because it keeps me out of the house. It gives me like a change of scenery. I don't work like crazy shifts. My job isn't like physically exhausting on my body. I mean, I'm physically exhausted from everything else, but like my job isn't too taxing. So I spend anywhere from 4 to 8 hours, sometimes even only 5 hours in a shift. And I'm just there, you know, talking to people. And I think I like it even more so because my favorite thing when people walk in and I'm like, hey, how you doing today? They're like, you work here. I just asked you how you're doing today and I'm wearing the Lush apron. Yeah, I work here. Do you see anyone else in the store? No? Yeah, just me, lady. Yeah, I work here. Sorry. So that one's always like very strange, but I like to mess with people's heads like that. So I think too, in like my work in retail, I'm paving the way to some extent for companies to be more open to hiring disabled people. I always hear that's like a big question I get on like social media if I post about working and stuff. How did you get the job? How did you do it? I have no other answer other than like, I busted my ass. I applied 100 times. I didn't get responses. I didn't get the interview, or I got the interview and then I didn't get a call back, or there was always a better candidate. And I just didn't give up. I kept pursuing things. So I worked for Vans for a couple years. I worked for Victoria's Secret. Now I work for Lush. I've worked for Target. And in each of these instances, I've had the chance to let management, at least in one store, know like, hey, you know, your space is inaccessible, whether it be needing proper bathrooms, you know, for employees because they're using it as a storage unit instead of, you know, keeping it open. Or in dressing rooms, they always seem to do the same thing. They use the handicap dressing room as a storage unit, and that's not like we shouldn't be doing that. Aisles will be too narrow. So I would just kind of roll through stores and complain about all the things that were like non-ADA compliant. But as an employee, it wasn't necessarily complaining. It was like, hey, I need you to make this space more accessible for me. And then in turn, they were like, oh, we're not just making it more accessible for Lex because she works here. We're doing this because, oh, crap, like we actually have disabled customers. And it's actually pretty crazy that some people don't think about these things. I've also learned that as big as it should be, right, ADA law should be better known. There's a lot of people who don't know. So there's a lot of companies and stores that just either haven't been around long enough or the management wasn't educated on it. So they don't realize that, you know, walkways need to be a certain width for an individual in a wheelchair. They don't take into account that they may need to move a register because, hey, I can't get into that stupid tiny corner and make my way back out. Or, you know, anything from like even just being available to a customer, you know what I mean? Like, not like hovering because they're disabled and, oh, can I help you? Can I help you? Can I help you? Like a million times. Just be like, hey, you know, if you need any help, I'm here. Just let me know. And letting someone know too, I think all of those things make an experience better. They also help the disabled person to feel more comfortable in a situation, because I know for me that when that happens, when someone makes me feel comfortable in a certain setting, I go back 100 times to the same place. Whether it be like I'm going back to the same restaurant, I'm going back to the same bar, I'm going back to the same grocery store, same Target. Like, my Target people know who I am because I walk to it. And at the same time, I've probably asked for help with something. I've probably needed them at some point, or I probably expressed that something was like inaccessible and they made a small change. And that small change, though, for me is a huge deal, like it would be for any of us. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And now I'm laughing at what you said about work, and it's like, oh, you work here. You know, like there was this meme going around today in the SMA community. It's like SMA Pride Awareness Month bingo, and one of the, like, it's like all these things that we've heard a million times, and one of them was like, wait, you work? Like, yeah.
I didn't think anything of it growing up. I didn't realize that I didn't see disabled people working. I didn't realize that it was so taboo until I started applying. And I realized, oh, like plain and simple, I'm not valued here. It doesn't matter how smart I am. It doesn't matter how great my grades are. It doesn't matter how nice my resume looks, because the moment I show up for an interview, excuse me, and these people see the wheelchair, they're immediately like, oh, she can't do it. She can't do it. Or she's a liability. I've heard that one a bunch of times. I applied at Starbucks one time. I don't know why I did that. I guess I didn't think that all the way through, but they're like, we're so sorry. You know, we'd love to have you on the team, but you're a liability. And I was like, huh, I didn't even think about it. I was here thinking that I could pour a cup of coffee, and they're like, yeah, no, if something happens, it's too expensive basically to cover me. And I was like, alrighty, that's nice.
Which is ironic, because Starbucks was like one of the only organizations that put out a message about Disability Pride Month this July. So it's, you know, there's a...
the irony, you know?
They got their little token message out, but not saying that's representative of the entire company as a whole, but it's one of many instances.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I understood it, right? Like, I could see... I always try to, like, take a step back. I think a lot of us are... We're so fired up because we deal with injustice on a regular basis, whether it be some asshole parking in the handicap spot that he does not need for his giant truck, or some like rude lady just standing there staring at me while I'm trying to like pick an apple for like lunch or something. Like, there's so many like strange things that happen to us that we get fired up about, that in like instances like that, like with the Starbucks thing, I have to remind myself over and over again, even now, even like on a regular basis, you know, when I'm out, I don't want to be so angry. 20-year-old me, yeah, like I said, I would have burned down a million buildings. Even now, sometimes I want to burn down a million buildings, but like, I have to remind myself that it's not a lot of people's fault that they're as dumb as they are. Like, I know that sounds really bad, but they don't know disabled people. They don't have a disabled person, whether it be a friend, a family member. And so I have to kind of like make a joke of it and be like, oh, I'm so sorry. You're so stupid. You are in for a rude awakening later in life.
It's just one of the things that, I mean, ignorance is a byproduct of disability not being taught in the education system, disability rights, disability history, you know, all these things that, like you said, I mean, until someone deals with themselves, they're not really made aware of the issues that we face on a daily basis. And it's something that could change, but it takes change at the systemic level.
Well, I think something we kept hearing during COVID that I've appreciated was like, well, not, and I don't appreciate it because I don't want anyone to be sick, but basically the individuals who are experiencing like long COVID or the aftermath of COVID and were essentially disabled at that point, and then experiencing the injustices that we dealt with for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years, you know. And I always like think to myself, like, look at how easy it was for them to end up in my situation. At the same time, there comes a point where, so it's like a weird balancing. I, like you said, ignorance is just a byproduct, but at the same time, there's this point where, like, I think that's why I laugh at it. I'm like, oh, you're stupid. Sorry. Because why do we have to wait until you're in that situation? You know, elderly people are classified as disabled because they are not capable of doing as much as the younger, able-bodied person. So obviously, one little limitation can classify you as disabled. Again, why do we gotta wait so long to educate ourselves in these things? Or why do we gotta wait till you break a leg and you're in a, I was in a wheelchair for a week. It was so hard. Oh my gosh, my life was so difficult. I don't know how you do it. I'm pretty sure you've heard that dumb crap.
Oh
Like
yes.
what?
Oh yes.
No, disability's always been hard. You just got a sliver and not even like a real taste. You got a crumb of it on your
Crumb.
shirt. And now you think you know all too. No, like educate yourself. You're not alone on this freaking rock, guys. There's so many people. The least you could do is know your neighbor, right? Like, I don't know.
This is a dark joke, but I heard the comedian Josh Blue, who's one of my favorites, he has cerebral palsy, and he said, like, you know, not only are we the largest minority, but we're the only minority that you can join at any time. And it's so true. But
No,
it's just
yeah.
like, yeah.
I heard, I believe she's a TikToker, Erin. She's like a little able-bodied person could walk out and slip on a puddle and then be disabled. And I was like, there we go. You see what I mean? Yeah, that's all it takes is one good fall and you're screwed. Like it sucks, absolutely. But if that is the case, right? If there's always this impending doom that your able-bodiedness could end at any moment, why wouldn't you just be like, again, I'm not even saying like deep dive. I'm not saying you got to know exactly what ADA law is. I'm not saying you need to advocate all the time for inaccessibility, but like it could be something as simple as if you notice chairs in a doorway, move the fucking chair. Like it could be something as simple as like when you see somebody in a wheelchair, like me working, you don't need to ask the dumb question. Like you work, yes, I like use a little bit of your brain, just a little bit. I don't know what's stopping some people, but deductive reasoning, a little bit of analysis. I don't know. You pick your learning method, but why do we gotta go this route?
It's not too much to ask. It's very reasonable. And Lexi, wrapping up here, I just had a couple more questions, but we talked about before recording that you are on Evrysdi. So can you talk about what that's been like and if any changes you've experienced since starting the treatment?
I started Evrysdi in October of 2020, I believe.
That's, yeah, like about 2 months after it was
After it
approved.
was released, yes. So because I got the phone call in August that it was approved from my neurologist, and then because we had already been talking about it while it was still like in the testing phase, being that I'm an adult, and then my insurance company, and I'm pretty sure like everyone's dealt with, was like, "You're too old, you're too far progressed, we can't help you, you're not going to get Spinraza." So, we already knew that that's what we were aiming for. that my process to starting Everesty was fairly easy. Like, it was right off the bat. And he did mention too that I was going to be one of his first patients on it. So he can kind of like watch the effects of it and be able to speak to it later, because he already had adult patients too on Spinraza. So it was really my choice. I heard a lot of horror stories with Spinraza and people having like really bad experiences with their injections. So I was going to try to avoid one less major procedure every 3 months. So we went with the Everesty route. It doesn't taste bad. It tastes like a strawberry, kiwi, Capri Sun. It smells sweet too. I know that's always the first question. Like, what does it taste like? What does it taste like? It's actually sweet. It's super weird. Before I even talk about improvements, I know I don't need to, but I don't want anyone to base my experiences and compare it to theirs. I never want anyone to feel bad or think it's not working for them, because it's important to remember that these are treatments. They're not cures. So we're not magically going to like get up and walk, and we're not going to magically like get better overnight. These are things to prolong the progression of the condition. So for myself, I kind of went in there too, like with that same mindset, because I didn't want to compare my experiences to anybody. And I didn't think anything was happening for a really long time, but I did notice I wasn't getting worse, which was nice, because I had already noticed little things, especially through the pandemic and being home more. I was having more trouble like rolling onto my side, or, you know, moving like my leg when laying on my back or something, like just little things that I wasn't able to do. And little by little, especially after deciding to, you know, try different forms of like, not even physical therapy, just like basic kind of like movement. I don't even want to say like yoga, because that sounds ridiculous too, because it wasn't yoga. But just like utilizing my body a little bit more. Like I said, I make candles. I like to cook. I like to do little things around the house. So I realized like lifting my coffee mug got a little easier. If I went and sat down and we had a beer, oh, like I can drag the beer across the table. Can't lift it, but I can drag it across the table. I could, you know, move the dog out of the way with my hand, you know, when they're bugging me. It was little things that I noticed. And as I started to pay more attention, I think the biggest thing was like my stamina. So I would get exhausted around, you know, our lovely spoon theory. So my week, right, of spoons, I would get tired around like day 2. Now I get tired around day 3, 4, somewhere in there, depending on like what I'm doing. So I would say I've had like decent experiences on it. Like, I haven't gained anything drastic back. But like I said, I'm not getting worse. And at the end of the day, that's all I really want. If I could slow it down, give myself a little bit more time to do all of the idiocies I want to do, and then, you know, let it take its course, and by all means, because I think I've also kind of accepted what it does. And then I've met so many people, and I don't even mean this like in the able-bodied, like, oh, you're so inspiring type bullshit. No, none of that. I've met individuals with SMA, so many adults who are physically capable of doing less than me and are thriving way past like anything that I could have thought for myself or half the able-bodied people I know. So I'm not even concerned at the end of the day where this condition will take me, because I'll be fine. My community's good. My support system's there. If I hit a bump, I know someone's already dealt with it. Well, I'll throw the question out into the giant abyss, and somebody's going to be like, oh yeah, no, I did it too. Cool. Can you give me some direction? And I think that helped a lot with even starting treatment, because I, again, not that I was lowering my expectation, but just seeing how many people were already so happy where they're at. I've seen people turn down treatment. I've seen people, I've heard it all basically, and we're good. I'm not getting worse. It's fine.
That's your, and I appreciate you saying too, it is very much a individual experience. I mean, that's the thing I tell people. Sorry, like I've been on Spinraza for going on 5 years, which is crazy. But yeah, it's very much like you don't really know how it's gonna affect you until you start. It's you can't really compare yourself to others. It's very much a it affects people in different ways. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And let's see, my last question here is, so you wrote this Instagram post the other day in which you presented a message to your younger self. So can you talk about what sparked that post and reiterate some of the things that you said in it?
Okay, so sorry if I get a little emotional here.
All good.
So, as I've gotten older, like I said, I look back at like things that I would have thought were absolutely impossible. If I were to go back and like even just teleport right into the front of little me, and she saw me now, short hair, tattooed, like looking like a total badass, because that's how I feel, she would think I was the coolest person. And at the same time, she would probably never believe half the shit we've been through in our life. And more, I'm realizing how fortunate I am to just be where I'm at, whether it is living independently or going down the street by myself for a cup of coffee or grabbing a beer with my husband. I am sl not even slowly, because I've always been so aware of these things, but as like especially like right now, like I don't have my chair, so I'm a little bit kind of I'm a little stuck. A little, and I feel like that put me in a bad mindset, and I basically got like super depressed for a moment, and I had to think back and be like, no, little me, if little me was looking at me, she'd like be so sad too, and I don't want little me to feel like we're not doing enough, because I'm still being crafty. I'm sitting here and I do little projects all day because I'm not really moving, but I got to keep myself busy. So I need to remind myself on a regular basis and remind little me, because we're all, I think we're a lot of us are healing our inner child, especially for myself, a lot of like medical trauma, a lot of people who just didn't believe I was disabled for a long time. They didn't take it seriously, and a lot of that did account into why later we diagnosed me with type 2, because of how quickly I progressed and how much I lost so soon. And I always think back, like little me needs to know that we're good. And all of it, whether it be we made it through school, we survived student debt, we survived a pandemic, we lost multiple jobs, we fell in love, I still work. Like I have so much, no matter how shitty my situation may be. Like my this like I mean, like we were talking about before this, the wheelchair thing, still kind of waiting on it, but we know how this goes. We've lived with it for so long. There's a lot of things that are fairly traumatic that we've just diminished to everyday life. And I don't think that's okay. So I try to remind myself, like, it's okay to feel these things. Like, it's okay to hurt, and it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to fall apart a little bit, because that's how I got here. I fell apart a little bit. I struggled, and it was all so worth it. So I wrote a letter to little me, reminding myself again, you're a strong, badass person in the future, dude. Keep going. And maybe telling little me keep going would make me feel like I could keep going. And it did. It absolutely did. And then to the number of people who responded, and it's like, I wish I would have heard this as a kid. And I'm like, dude, me too. I really wish I would have found my community sooner. I wish I would have found adults who could have encouraged me sooner. But it's okay. I didn't. But my adulthood is pretty fucking great and my like absolutely wild because I know people like you and I know people like Aaron and I know people like Kelly and I know there the list could go on like of the number of disabled people, people specifically too like with SMA that I know who are just rocking the shit of life. So again, like I have no complaints. So just reminding little me not to complain too much.
I love it, Lexi. Thanks so much for sharing. I really, you know, I know that was a really moving post, and we'll include your Instagram handle in the description so people can go follow you and see those. But
thank you.
Well, Lexi, again, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I love hearing your story. And we, you know, definitely keep on rocking. And I'm also an October baby, so I love horror and Halloween stuff too. So. Yeah.
You need to come back to California so we can do things out here. Horror right? Nights, scary farm. Come on, let's do it.
The best. That would be awesome. I would love to. Awesome. Well, for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow smanewstoday.com for all the latest news and perspectives regarding SMA. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.